This is Phil Ferrand, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It's a normal week. Yay! So I may be in for a little bit tomorrow, but I think this is just about the end of my week, and I'm going to go home and do some writing. The writing is going well. I'm moving my way through. I think I've got under control how the book finishes out. I got a couple little pieces that I've got to get into place, but sorry, I've suddenly got a little tickle in my throat. I think all in all, we're in good shape. So this will be interesting. This book is not nearly as emotive as the last book. That book was really the high point in the series. It's designed to be the high point. It's the Passion Week. It's, of course, going to be the high point. But this is the book that wraps things up, and I think I have something good to say in it, and so it's going to be interesting. I have an extra passenger in here today. Apparently, I have a fly. I just saw the fly go by, and I'm hoping that the fly does not fly in my mouth while I'm talking. Anyways, that's been good this week. I've enjoyed some really good times with friends this week, chatting. Got a chance to get together with my buddy on Friday, and we talked. A couple that I usually get together with on Saturday, they were actually on a road trip this week, so didn't get together with them. Found out this week that I've got another buddy. I'm going to start getting together with him on Monday mornings. And then my good buddy I get together with on Tuesday. We had a really nice time. It was funny because I hadn't been able to talk to him in like a month because our schedules were kind of wonky. And at one point, he kind of got this grin on his face after we were talking, and he said, "You know, there is no one else in my life that I talk to about this kind of stuff." And we were talking about, you know, the church and faith and Jesus and all that kind of thing. So that was fun. Had a nice chat with my buddy on Wednesday. Talked about some interesting things, and, you know, he gave me some pushback on some things, and so it was good. It was good. It's good to talk to friends. I like it. Anyways, today, I have a fairly controversial topic. Controversial enough that as I chatted with my friends about this topic over the last couple of weeks, I actually had one said, "I don't know if you should do that topic." He was concerned for my reputation. But I'm not really that concerned for my reputation, and besides which, I think I have something to say about it. And I think what I have to say is not going to put me in any danger of ruining my reputation, so we will just talk about it. And what's fascinating to me about this topic is that it is so visceral. This topic will get reactions from people so fast. And it has for years. And if my predictions are true, it will for years. If what is happening is what I think is happening. I think one of the earliest memories I have about this topic from media was the Phil Donahue show years ago. I was watching an episode, and there was a guy on the Phil Donahue show that was a male activist. You know, we heard all about the female activists. This guy was a male activist. And he's on the show, and he's, you know, nicely dressed. He just happens to be wearing a floor-length flowery cotton skirt. It, And it's so interesting because he's talking about people's reaction to the fact that he's wearing this skirt. Now, mind you, he was not attempting to dress in drag and pass. As I recall, the guy had a beard. He's not wearing makeup. He's wearing a man's shirt or a man's suit coat. I can't remember which. He just happens to be wearing a full-length patterned skirt. Maxi length. I mean, he's not even showing his ankles. And I think he's wearing just like regular shoes. And Phil Donahue was interviewing him. And, of course, the question comes up, why are you wearing a skirt? And he said, because I like skirts. I like the way they feel. And his point was, why should this make any difference? It's just cloth. Women wear men's tailored clothing all the time. What difference does it make if I wear something that is tailored for a woman? Which, in my mind, is actually a pretty good question. He said that he actually would have friends that would say, oh, I know someone and you should meet her because she's very progressive and very open-minded. And so I think you'd really hit it off. And so he says, well, fine, I'll go out with her. So he was talking about how this woman had, you know, called up and asked where he lives, said she'd be by to pick him up. And okay, well, that's fine. So he said, there's some guy sitting next to me who's proving that he has an engine on his car. So this guy said, the woman comes to his house, rings the doorbell. He said, I walked down. And he said, I opened the door, and sure enough, she's in this fairly severely tailored men's suit, very kind of austere looking and dominant looking. And he said, I said to her, that's fine. I didn't realize, you know, you kind of wanted to be the dominant one tonight. So just a second. And he said, I went back upstairs, and he said, I went ahead and changed into one of my skirts. And he said, I came down and she looked at me and started kind of babbling and made an excuse and left. See, I love this because I love these preconceptions. I love these stereotypical norms that we get locked into. And then we have these visceral reactions when anyone steps outside them. I love talking about quote-unquote sacred cows. Because I like to think about why is this such a big deal? So there was a New York Times article, I think it was in the New York Times, by Ruth Padawer, P-A-D-A-W-E-R. And the name of the article was, What's So Bad About a Boy Who Wants to Wear a Dress? And it was a very interesting article. Very interesting article. I still haven't gotten rid of that tickle in my throat, and I don't have any water, so I may be coughing through some of this. It's not because I'm embarrassed about the topic. It's just I have a little tickle in my throat. What's so bad about a boy who wants to wear a dress? And the article is about children. They have a bunch of different designations for them, but one of them is gender fluid. And they, for instance, talk about a boy named Alex, whose parents are Susan and Rob. They said they had pretty much obscured all their names. And the parents said that for as long as they can remember, Alex has been gender fluid. That at any given moment, he is equally passionate about soccer players and princesses and superheroes and ballerinas. Not to mention lava, unicorns, dinosaurs, and glitter rainbows. So here you've got a boy, a young boy, he's in preschool, And he just pretty much likes a lot of stuff. And she said they had written and explained to the preschool teachers that Alex had recently become just inconsolable, that his parents had banned him wearing dress-up beyond dress-up time. And they had consulted with a psychologist and the parents of other, quote, gender non-conforming children. And they had concluded that, quote, the important thing was to teach him not to be ashamed of who he feels he is. And so they had a purple, pink, and yellow striped dress that he would be wearing the next morning. So, okay, so, you know, when they talked to Alex, you know, he sort of proclaims himself as a girl and a boy because he's interested in all these things. He's not just interested in boy things. Okay, so, you know, obviously this makes some people really uncomfortable. And this gets into a huge, larger discussion about gender and transgender and all of that stuff. But I'm not... And there have been all kinds of approaches through the years about corrective therapy and some parents just letting their kids do what they want. One of my very close friends, when their little boy was about that age, 3 or 4, he really liked to wear his sister's slip. He really, really liked to wear his sister's slip. And mom went, yeah, okay, sure, fine. And so around the house, he wore his sister's slip. And I can remember multiple times coming over to their house, and he would have the little slip on, and he would be dancing around. And there came a point where he just sort of grew out of it. And today, he's a fine, strapping young man. He's married, has kids. But he's still not concerned about stereotypical behavior. And he has told me at one point, he said, I'm really looking forward. He said, if my daughters ever come down the stairs trying to go to school where they're like wearing tube tops and mini skirts and that kind of stuff, I'm just going to go get dressed up just like them. I'm assuming he'll go get the clothes from somewhere. I don't know where. And I'm just going to say, fine, I'll take you to school. If you think that that's acceptable clothing to wear, I'll wear clothing like that to take you to school. Which I think is tremendous. I just think it's fabulous. Because his viewpoint is, this doesn't intimidate me. And I can just bet that if I come down wearing this kind of stuff, that my daughters are going to decide very, very quickly that they don't want to have people see me dressed like that. And then I will tell them, I don't want to see you dressed like that. Or I don't want to have people seeing you dressed like that. Which is a really interesting approach. So anyways, you know, I don't really want to talk about all the different ways that people deal with gender fluid children or all that kind of stuff. I would rather get to the crux of it. Really the crux of it, as what I perceive as the crux of this whole issue. And of course, there's lots of interesting things that we can just throw out immediately as observations that are obviously true. And that is, there is not nearly the same type of reaction that people have to women crossing the gender barrier, the perceived gender barrier towards men, as there are men crossing the perceived gender barrier towards women. Because women, we have women dressing up like men frequently, wearing quote-unquote men's clothing, and nobody thinks anything of it. We have women who are participating in manly activities, sports, hunting, those kinds of things, what we would consider to be more manly activities, and we don't think anything of it. So the question then becomes, if it's fine for women to cross gender boundaries in a male direction, why is it odd for men to cross gender boundaries in a female direction? And she actually gets into this a little later in the article, but she brings something up in the article that I did not know, that I thought, and there's another interesting observation. And that is, in the 19th century, which would have been the 1800s, in the 19th century, both boys and girls often wore dresses and long hair until they were 7. Colors were not gendered consistently. At times, this is quoting from her article, pink was considered a strong and therefore masculine color, while blue was considered delicate. Children's clothes for both sexes included lace, ruffles, flowers, and kittens. That started changing in the 20th century. And then, of course, we have come into now a fairly rigid designation as to what is acceptable. And she said by the 1940s, dainty trimming had been purged from boys' clothing, and so had much of the color spectrum. And so by the time you get to the 1940s, that's pretty much all over. So men are supposed to wear kind of more muted colors, and they're certainly not supposed to have lace on anything or ruffles on anything. I remember the big Seinfeld episode with the pirate shirt, and Jerry Seinfeld was having to wear this pirate shirt, and it had all these ruffles on it. But I don't want to be a pirate! So this is all very interesting. Now, why should this be? Why should we have this dichotomy arise? And what does it mean, really, foundationally? What does it mean? Well, the article has a couple of stabs at it. I personally don't think they're very good stabs at it, but it has a couple of stabs at it. Oh, there is one other interesting thing in the article, and that is she talks about the fact that in 1998, there was a study for the journal Sex Roles that suggested how ordinary it was for girls to exist in the middle space. By that they mean the middle space between girls and boys. As far as people who reported that they had been tomboys, 46% of female senior citizens, 69% of female baby boomers, and 77% of Gen X females reported having been tomboys. Okay, so we're talking about huge, significant percentages of women transitioning across what is the perceived gender barrier towards male side. Okay. So why is that okay, but the other direction is not okay? All right, so she quotes a couple of psychologists, psychiatrists, whatever, in here. One of them says that, well, there's a lot more privilege to being a man in our society. When a boy wants to act like a girl, it subconsciously shakes our foundations, because why would someone want to be the lesser gender? Now, that's pretty interesting. We might come back to that. Another one that someone said is, well, people rely on gender to help understand the world, to make order out of chaos. It's been a way of measuring someone's well-being. Are you adjusted? Do you fit? Or are you unhinged? The social categories of man, woman, boy, and girl are fundamental. And when an individual challenges that by blurring the line, it's very disorienting at first, as if they're questioning the laws of gravity. Now, the lady in the article does say that there has been some loosening of this over the years. that among straight men, long hair and certain necklaces and certain pairs of earrings are almost normative, at least in some communities. And plenty of men wax their eyebrows, get manicures, and wear pink. In some parts of the country, these shifts have provided an opening for boys who buck the gender norms. It's interesting because I grow out my hair to donate it. And I have a friend who, when he came to Praise Assembly, I was actually the music minister at the time. And he said when he saw me up directing the choir, since I was a musician and I had a ponytail, his first thought was, oh, he's a recovering homosexual. Which I am not. So that's what all the noise and fury is about in the article. It's a very interesting article. It's a long article, has lots of examples and lots of stories from children and both from parents trying to come to this. But at the crux of this whole article is, why is this such a big deal? And here's what I would give you as my answer to why is this such a big deal. I'm getting my mail. One moment. Oh, my wife must have already gotten mail. I think what we see in this transition, especially since in European nations, in England, I guess, in the 19th century, it was nothing to dress boys and girls the same up until they were 7. And even after that, you have fashions where you have ruffles and flourishes and bright colors. I think what we're seeing is that as we move into more and more structured marketing, where we're looking to sell things, I'm backing into my garage. If I can get my garage door open, there it is. As we're looking to sell things, what marketers turn to more and more frequently in their advertisements is that which is the oldest thing that is used to sell things, and that is sex, particularly the female form. And what we find as we move forward as a society is we find more and more emphasis on the female form as a primary vehicle to sell things, because that's what motivates men to get their attention, and that's what motivates women to get their attention. And there is this continual refining of these images to make them more and more powerful, specifically the female form. And it's used to sell everything. Okay, well, why is it used to sell everything? Because they are capitalizing on some very, very primal instincts. And I've talked about this before, that the great lie that the flesh tells to a man is that women exist to help him control his sperm count. And the great lie that the flesh tells to women is that men exist to take care of them. And so men use women as sex objects, and women use men as success objects. And so you may hear the fly buzzing around in here. He's still in here. So if you hear, that's the fly. That's not me doing fly impressions. I don't know. Anyways, so when you put it in those contexts, and when you see the refinement of all of these images that bombard us, what you have as outgrowths of all of those images, I think, is some very interesting things. You see the male position becoming, wow, that really motivates me to buy beer when there's bikini women's. Wow, I'm really helpless and powerful because me want to have sex with that. And there is this reaction inside men whenever they see all these beautiful women on ads and in TVs and certainly in print, where Photoshop has slimmed them down and tightened them up and given them smaller waist and taken away their imperfections and all that kind of stuff, the reaction from men is me want to have sex with that. And it feels like something that's almost uncontrollable within them. And the message that marketers would like to believe is that it is uncontrollable, that if they put enough pretty women on things, they can motivate men to buy things. I mean, certainly the alcohol companies would believe that that is true. So from the male side, this image of this beautiful woman, or really any image that has components that are associated with femininity, that becomes an uncontrollable feeling, a feeling of something that is uncontrollable and enticing. From the women's side, when they see how men react to all these images, the message that is given to them is this is power. I can get what I want. I can be taken care of. I can find safety and security if I know how to wield this power correctly. Because I can wield this power at the man of my choice who will be a good provider, who will take care of me, who will protect me. That will get me what I want. And then I'll be safe. So from a female perspective, I think these images of femininity say, that's really powerful and I can use that to get what I want. From a male perspective, it becomes a feeling of, wow, there is a lot of control in that, and I am really drawn to that. I'm drawn to that on such a visceral level, I'm not sure if I can control myself if I would get around these images too much. So now, when you have a woman who is transitioning from femininity into something that's more masculine, it is non-threatening because the male looks at this masculinized female who's wearing, you know, sloppy clothes and is out hunting and stuff, and he doesn't necessarily react with me want to have sex with that. The female who looks at a friend who is transitioning that way feels no loss of power whatsoever because she looks at it and says, oh, yeah, well, that's not going to be very attractive. That's not a threat. On the flip side, when you have a guy who is transitioning into roles of femininity, if guys see that, and there are many, many stories. I had some friends that were part of a religious organization, and they went for a convention at a town, and they all went out to eat, and one of them was kind of looking. There was a woman at the bar, and he was going, wow, she is good looking. And the other guy started laughing, and they were saying, dude, that's a guy. And he was like, what? Because the reaction is not, listen, if that person wants to dress up like a girl, hey, I don't care. The reaction is that person could exercise some control over me, and it's not a woman, it's a guy. And I'm afraid of that now. And so the reaction is very visceral. The same thing, I think, happens from the female perspective. That if you've got a guy who is moving into femininity, that is perceived as a direct threat. Because maybe that guy is going to be better at attracting guys than I'm going to be. And if he is, I'm going to lose my power. There's also an interesting little conundrum in some of that, in that you have some women who think it's cute if a guy puts on a dress. Specifically, they think it's cute if a guy puts on a dress who isn't connected to them. And so they're all hip. They'll watch the transvestite movies, the popular ones, you know, like From Wang Fu with Love. They'll watch these movies and it's funny and it's great. You know, they might say, well, when I was in college, I had gay friends and they dressed up. I thought it was great. And I even helped them, blah, 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 blah. You know, they might be more than happy to assist a guy who's approaching his femininity, provided it's not someone who's connected to them that's helping them be safe, helping them being provided to. Because if that particular person, that particular man is crossing into femininity, that's perceived as a threat then, because I might lose my protector. I might lose my provider. And so I'm going to get really uncomfortable if, quote unquote, my guy is moving that way. So I think at the base of it, this huge visceral reaction that we're having here really has to do with these fundamental lies that the flesh tells us. That it tells men, you need women to control your sperm count, and the attraction that you feel towards a woman is just nearly incontrollable, and you just me have sex with that. That's just a natural way that you're supposed to conceptualize, which that's not true. Okay, if men would take control of their own sperm count and if they would make a habit of telling themselves women are human beings too and they need to be treated as human beings and seen as human beings and talked to by looking them directly in the eye as human beings instead of worried about what they're wearing, I think that would then degrade this visceral reaction that they have when they would see a guy in a dress. Because the first reaction they would have would not be, me have sex with that. The first reaction would be, and there's another human being. Conversely, from the female perspective, if women will go out and realize that they're responsible for their own lives and that men do not simply exist to take care of them and provide for them, but that men are human beings too, and treat them as human beings, not just as someone that they can get to provide a safe haven for them and can have their own creative projects and have their own enterprises and have their own entrepreneurial ventures. I think those women would be far less inclined to be concerned about whether or not the guy who's sitting next to them is wearing a dress or not. Because it wouldn't be a threat. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.